It's a double shot of reviews today with the series premiere of X-Men 97 and the latest episode of The Bad Batch. This is Geekville Radio number 353, and it starts right now.
Geekville Radio.
Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks and geekettes. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville, and the host of Geekville Radio, coming at you with episode 353 in your hymnals. If you look at your podcast device, or if you go to geekvilleradio.com/353, you can see the show notes for this episode. And like we said at the top, we are talking the two-episode series premiere of X-Men 97. And we are talking Season 3, Episode 8 of The Bad Batch, which is quite possibly the best thing currently about the Disney era of Star Wars, going on right now in March of the year of our Lord, 2024. But we'll start with X-Men 97. And this definitely lived up to my expectations, and judging by other reviews, I'm certainly not alone. I think one of the things that makes this show work is that Marvel took extra steps to make the animation look like the 2D hand-drawn Days of Yore. I think we kind of take for granted the standard CGI 3D or cell animated stuff, even if it's kind of made to look like it's traditional animation, it's still probably cell animated. The only real change is that it's widescreen instead of the standard 4x3 definition. Maybe there'll be something in the future where somebody might be able to have the choice of watching in 4x3 or widescreen. Otherwise, it's kind of like putting your Blu-ray player up to your old tube screen TV. Even on top of that, the setting clearly is still in the 1990s. There's references to pagers. There's even pop culture references with Cyclops doing the whole "yeah, not" thing like every Wayne's World sketch was back in the 90s. And there are some minor differences in the dialogue. This is just coming from somebody who was old enough to remember animated series on broadcast TV back in the day. We're not necessarily talking about cable TV, and certainly not premium cable. We're talking about the old-fashioned analog rabbit ears over-the-air broadcast television. There's stuff said in this show that definitely would not have cut it back in 1990s network or syndication, because in those days, words like kill or death or assassinate or anything like that were rarely used, probably because they were considered too dark for kid shows, or at least shows where kids would be watching. So a lot of times the villains, if you heard Cobra Commander or Megatron or whatever, they would yell "destroy them" or "vanquish them" or anything like that. It was all destroy, annihilate, more complex words like that. But in this show, there's really no mincing of words. Storm Whiteout tells Sunspot that he'll be killed, that if he's found. And Wolverine even uses the word "pissed," talking about people are pissed. And, you know, that never would have been said on a Saturday morning cartoon back in the day. Now, with all that out of the way as far as the presentation, let's look at the story. The story did take heavily from the comics, much like the original series did. And a little bit of personal knowledge here, a little personal story, especially with the second episode of this, which took heavily from Uncanny X-Men 200. That issue, number 200, was actually called The Trial of Magneto, and it was. It was The Trial of Magneto, the first one, because Marvel's been remaking everything, kind of like how there's movie remakes of everything. Marvel's remaking their stories of old into newer stories again. But this was right about the time I first started reading the X-Men. It was right around this issue 200, and Magneto being put on trial for crimes against humanity, and the UN gets attacked by these Friends of Humanity, and the X-Men have to go into life-saving mode, defending these people who were calling for their punishment, calling for their heads, and Madeline Pryor goes into labor. Now, who's Madeline Pryor? We'll get to that later. But it was very much like how we saw in that animated episode. There's also the thing of Storm sporting her mohawk look, which she had in the 80s, and it's kind of combined with the silver suit that she had in the 90s. And I think there's a reason for that, which we'll get to in a little bit, because if you're familiar with the comics, you kind of know where some of this is coming. Like we said, the UN charged Magneto with these crimes against humanity. Magneto is able to convince them through his own actions and through the actions of the X-Men that in the end, he does want justice for his kind. He doesn't want mutants hunted and killed just for being mutants. And so, much like the comics, he gets the pardon. He becomes the new leader of the X-Men. The X-Men have trouble trusting him at first, but things go more or less like how we saw in the show. Now, getting to Storm, what happened to her is also very much what happened in the comics. It just happened earlier than this. I think it was a couple months earlier, because when I started reading X-Men, she had already lost her powers. But it had to do with her taking a blast meant for Rogue that was supposed to rob Rogue of her powers, which, if anybody knows Rogue, she probably would have welcomed that, but decided Storm took the shot, robbed her of her powers, and about that time was when she started wearing a mohawk and wearing kind of a look like a black mini skirt and a half shirt, looked like kind of a cross between a punk rocker and a dancer for Janet Jackson. That kind of set about her story of trying to reclaim her powers. And she actually became the leader of the X-Men for a time as well, even though she had no powers. I don't know if we'll get that, but expect to see a storyline to come of Storm in search of reclaiming her powers. So that brings us to Madeline Pryor. And anybody who saw the end of the episode, the second episode, are probably wondering, what's with the two Jean Greys? And again, if you know the comics, you know where this is going. The Dark Phoenix saga was adapted in the original TV series. And while Jean did survive that TV version, in the comics version, she was killed off. It was the first of the many Jean Grey deaths. And I'm using that in quotes, even though this is just audio only. I'm putting up my fingers for the quotes, deaths. Because everybody has to be killed off and resurrected in comics, certainly ever since Superman. Although this was years before that. But Jean was killed off, and then sometime later, Cyclops met a woman named Madeline Pryor who looked exactly like Jean. And Scott fell in love with her all over again because it was like having Jean back. He didn't know that Madeline was actually a clone of Jean Grey created by Mr. Sinister. And Madeline did actually give birth to their son, Nathan, who would grow up to be Cable, just like Jean gave birth to a Nathan in the series, in the TV series. Now, Madeline went insane and went on to become the evil and very scantily clad Goblin Queen. You can search for that. Goblin was spelled with a Y, but she was kind of the Darth Vader to Sinister's Emperor Palpatine, and she was killed off during the Inferno Marvel event. That was one of their big crossover events of the 80s. Actually, I think they killed both her and Sinister at that point. And Sinister's come back many times from the dead, even though he was literally blasted into pieces in Inferno. Spoiler alert, he's come back, so it's not like he actually died. But wait, there's more. Getting back to Jean Grey. In the comics, it turns out that the Jean Grey who became the Dark Phoenix was not actually the real Jean Grey. The real one was protected and cocooned in some sort and was freed sometime later. So that brings us to three Jean Greys, with two of them being killed off. So what does this mean for the series? Well, this is a speculation here. The carrot has been dangled. Mr. Sinister actually did hold Jean hostage in the TV series sometime before the Dark Phoenix episodes. And you know, it was a season before or a few weeks before. I forget the exact timings, but it is very possible that during this time, Sinister got Jean's DNA, cloned her, and one of these genes is the real Jean and one of them is the clone. But which one, you might ask? Is it this new one that comes in looking for the X-Men? Or could it be like what they tried to do with the Clone Saga for Spider-Man in the 90s was the one we thought was the real one all along, could that have actually been the clone? Could the clone have become Dark Phoenix and this one coming back is actually the real Jean, which would mean that the clone is the one that is giving birth to Nate that would match what happened with Madeline in the comics. I suppose you could say that there's some spoilers in there. We know that one of these genes is real, one of them isn't, and one of them is the mother of the child, or it's possible there's some time travel story going along in here, because anybody who knows Nathan grows up to be Cable, a time traveler in his own right. We already got Bishop time traveling. It could all be some wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff thing, so. But I think one of these genes is going to go evil. We'll probably have a much more TV-friendly version of Goblin Queen, because if you've seen the outfit she wore in the comics, you're probably not going to get away with that on TV in the year of our Lord 2024. Like I said, it's got me pumped. I'm thinking this is going to be a pretty cool adaption for the season. Maybe it'll carry over into next season. I don't know if next season will be X-Men 98. If we might get a more Spider-Man, could we get a Spider-Man 97, Spider-Man 98, something like that? I don't know. I'm definitely enjoying the ride so far. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to dive into The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 8. This is Geekville Radio, and we'll be right back.
Attention all Time Lords and Ladies. This message is being sent by Lady President Romana and the High Council of Gallifrey. Geekville Radio presents Examining the Doctor. Join Mark and Seth as they bring their signature blend of knowledge and humor about everybody's favorite Time Lord, the Doctor. From Hartnell to Whitaker, Examining the Doctor provides episode commentaries for favorite and not-so-favorite Doctor Who stories. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, GeekvilleRadio.com, or wherever podcasts can be found.
All right, we are back, and we are talking The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 8, Bad Territory. This is the latter half of the Bad Batch's final season. Band is mostly back together, and what awaits our heroes when they dip back into the underworld? This episode, it's not going to take too long here. I don't think it's going to take more than a few minutes here, but this episode really felt like it was a side quest. Like if you're playing an RPG, this is one of those side quests where it might flesh out some details, but it really wasn't necessary to understand the grand story here. And the gist of the story is that Hunter and Wrecker teamed up with Fennec Shand. They ran off to some swamp planet. I forget the name of the planet, but it was basically like space Louisiana. I mean, there was a lot of swamp, a lot of gators. I almost expected people to be talking with Cajun accents and almost expected to hear the classic Jerry Reed song Amos Moses playing in the background while they were on their pontoon boats there. We get the obligatory cantina scene where Hunter and Wrecker meet with Shan. You kind of can't go onto another planet without having a cantina scene, it seems. And they eventually find and catch the bounty that Shan was after, Siler Saris. And they do that in exchange for information about M-counts. Although the last scene we saw in the episode, kind of the stinger of sorts, was Fennec Shand talking to a mysterious other party about the clones, about the Bad Batch. So it definitely dangles the carrot out there that Fennec may be double-crossing the heroes, maybe double-crossing the team. She assured them that they could trust her, but yet they're putting it out to the audience that maybe they can't. Maybe she is double-crossing them. It all depends on who it is that she's talking to. Now, we do know we are going to get other bounty hunters back in here. We know we're getting Cad Bane again. We know that we are getting Asajj Ventress back as well. Could she be talking to any of them? Could she be talking to Cad Bane? Possibly. Could she be talking to Asajj Ventress, who I don't think she really has much history with them? If we are talking bounty hunters, the one that makes the most sense that she would be talking to is Boba Fett. Because, one, Boba Fett is also a clone. These are his brothers. Boba was very aware that all of these clones, including the Bad Batch, would be part of his father's DNA. It would also be interesting to see if Boba Fett actually does meet Omega. Because I've said for years, and for what it's worth, I mean, Daniel Logan, I think I had replied on his Facebook that Omega Fett does kind of have a ring to it, and Daniel Logan liked that comment. Take that for what it's worth. But I do think Omega Fett does kind of have a cool sound to it. So I think it would be very interesting to see what would happen if Boba Fett did meet Omega. What could possibly happen from there? And it would also show that Boba Fett had history with Fennec. And it would make complete sense then as to why Boba Fett basically saved Fennec's life in that first season of The Mandalorian. So it's the one that makes the most sense. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's somebody else that can make it, that could also still work. But for my money, for my credits, that is the best option here. It's the most interesting option, is that she is actually talking to Boba Fett. And if she is talking to Boba Fett, it might not be a double cross. Boba Fett may want to help Omega. We'll see. But like I said, it felt like a side quest because the characters didn't learn anything more than they didn't already know before. We as viewers really didn't learn any more than we already knew before, except for there being a giant planet. There's this big swamp that's basically space Louisiana. So I was saying, you can practically skip this episode entirely. I think I gave it like a C+ when I was giving it its grading, because there's also some scenes with Omega trying to teach Crosshair how to meditate. And I think one of the things that might be going on here is we're going to see more of Omega's force sensitivity. I don't know if they actually took a segment of, actually, I think they did, now that I think about it, because I think they actually did mention Crosshair. They just mentioned him by his designation number, about his blood sample being taken and not having an M count. This meditation is probably going to work more for Omega than it will for Crosshair, but we'll see. I mean, it's pretty clear many people in real life are not force sensitive. Lord knows I probably am not, but meditation and spirituality can certainly be a good thing. And I do think it's entertaining to see Omega paired off and kind of getting this friendship with Crosshair, because these are characters that couldn't be more opposite. More than just one being a younger, at least in age, appearance girl, and the other being a seasoned veteran military man. She's more of a pacifist. He's a shoot first and maybe question the bodies, maybe question the survivors. She wants to help everybody. Crosshair just wants to escape and get to the next job. But she genuinely wants to help Crosshair with his shooting hand. It's one of the worst things I think that could happen to somebody like that. All she knows, and the words of Randall from Clerks, all they know is killing in white uniforms. But Omega sees Crosshair as a brother, and she's going to want to help her brother. I think this is what it comes down to. And it will be interesting to see how much this carries over to the rest of the team. How many of the team are actually going to survive this season? I think the body count's going to be pretty high when it comes to the main characters we see at the end of this season. So, like I said, this wasn't certainly not the best episode. It's quite frankly probably the weakest episode of the season so far. It wasn't bad. I didn't feel like my time was totally wasted, even though we didn't really learn anything. I actually did have fun seeing a swamp planet, because we saw that in Dagobah, but it was fun seeing that on kind of a different level. Like I said, one that was a little bit more habitable than Dagobah was. So we'll see if things kick in, because there hasn't been that much plot advancement these last couple episodes. So hopefully things will get kicked into gear. We'll get some action, and hopefully we will have a more exciting latter half of the season than we've gotten so far. So this is Geekville Radio. If you liked what you've heard, thank you for listening. If you didn't like what you heard, hey, thank you for listening. You can find us at geekvilleradio.com. If this is the first time you're hearing us, welcome. You can find us on the podcast platform of your choosing. We're all over Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. Basically anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us. Just do a search for Geekville Radio. You can find a show. You can find us at geekvilleradio.com. We have the social media, Geekville Radio on X/Twitter, at Facebook, and at Instagram. So give us a like, give us a review, give us a rating. And if you give us a review, the only thing I ask is just be honest. If you think what we do is good, definitely let us know. If you think we suck, Definitely let us know. I welcome all feedback as long as it is genuine. So just be honest with what you say. We're going to be back. Issue 354 is going to be right around the corner. Probably getting into some news, and we'll go back to the old reliable reviews if we have to. So I'm going to power down the Geekville Radio Studios here, and we will talk to you folks again next time.
Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved.